This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You might assume we're both good at presenting to a live audience because of this podcast. But at the end of the day, when we record, it really feels like we're just talking to one another. Presenting information in person in a formal setting to a large audience is something that still makes us really nervous. To prepare for a live speaking event we're hosting together, we turned to our masterclass subscription to not only refine our presentation skills, but to build our confidence in a different kind of public speaking capacity. Between Robin Roberts, Hillary Clinton, and Kevin Hart's expertise, our confidence skyrocketed. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass helps you actually do it. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master negotiate with Chris Voss, think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or plan your dream wedding with celebrity event planner Mindy Wise, Masterclass has you covered. There are over 200 classes to pick from, with new classes added every month, like our latest aha moments from Robin Roberts' Effective and Authentic Communication class that we watched before our event presentation. She taught us how to establish a genuine connection with the audience from the start. I'll always be a little nervous before presenting, but Masterclass prepared us in a way that dialed my nerves down and gave me tools to ground myself. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 50% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Welcome back to another episode of Shrink Chicks.
Take a seat on our virtual therapy couch and get ready to learn all about, well, you.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're both licensed marriage and family therapists and relationship experts. We're the owners and founders of The Therapy Group, a nationwide psychotherapy practice with down-to-earth therapists just like us.
Your session is starting, so get ready to know yourself and grow yourself.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Em.
How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, you know, because I spent the whole day with you.
The whole day?
We've literally spent the entire day together.
We have been on some type of technology since 10 a.m.
All day.
FaceTime, it's been Zoom, lovely. Phone call, everything.
It's been so lovely.
Lovely.
And I just ate some edamame.
That was your snack, huh?
It was leftovers.
And edamame was your leftover?
It just doesn't seem... I did that, some sushi, and then some shumai. You know, I had like a whole leftover meal.
Yes, you had a... you know the word I hate the most, right? Do you know the word?
No.
Okay, you know how like a lot of people hate the word moist? I don't hate the word moist.
Doesn't
do you hate that
me.
Word?
No.
What word do you hate?
Okay, I hate when people use... like food terms for things that aren't food.
like somebody says delicious when they're talking about a sunset.
Exactly. Like when someone said like, oh, did you see that baby? She was so yummy. And I'm like, like, I don't know. I can't. I don't know why. It's just to me that I can't. You know what I mean, though?
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. It's not a specific word. It's a context, but continue.
Mine is smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord.
I don't like this word.
Interesting.
I feel like it is like we grew up not that far from Lancaster, and it's like very like
is
Pennsylvania
it a Dutch?
Dutch.
Is it like a Dutch term?
It's like Pennsylvania Dutch German word smorgasbord. I'm pretty sure it means just buffet in German. I don't know if that's true.
Sure.
But I don't know why, but forever it brings up some shit for me. So let's make that our intro question for today because we have too much to talk about in today's episode. We can't get off track today.
We can't. We made up our own intro question.
That was our intro question because, well, we just have a lot to talk about because we have to talk about premarital conversations. This is a very big topic that we are going to try to put into one episode. We're going to see how this goes. So we have an amazing premarital course in our office. You can check it out on the website. It's fully secular. One of the reasons we developed this is we had so many people who would come in and say like, well, the only one you can find is like pre-canon work or like some religiously affiliated thing. A lot of folks don't identify religion anymore. So we said, all right, cool. We'll come up with it. So we have right now two amazing folks in our office, Kelly Mariani and Kate Peabody, who are offering this premarital work in this specific course that we do. So we're going to try to talk about all of them.
So, but before we start, I wanted to hit you with some stats.
Yes, please stat me up, baby.
We love stats. There is a common misconception that divorce rates like have increased, but they've actually decreased over time. The divorce rate has actually decreased from a rate of 4 to 2.5. I'm not sure what that means, actually, now that I look back at that. Right? Like, what does that mean?
I don't know. Where did you get this stat from?
I'm not sure. No, it had like so many stats. I need to figure out what that means. I'm going to look back on it. However, it has decreased significantly since the year 2000.
When it was 50% and everyone when it lost was 50%.
And now everyone still thinks that it's the same at that and it's not. Something else that I thought was very interesting that I found when I was doing research is that there are a few reasons why people cite that they got a divorce, lack of commitment or infidelity, and also couples report arguing and excessive conflict. Another one is that couples marry too young and, you know, this one is huge, financial problems as a cause for divorce. But the biggest thing that I wanted to say out of all of this is that over 70% of couples report not understanding the realities or stages of marriage. A lack of knowledge about what marriage entails is one of the leading contributing factors to divorce. Mm. In fact, 72% of couples reported they didn't fully understand the commitment involved in marriage before they tied the knot. And many divorced people say that they were surprised their partner changed over their marriage and were unable to personally cope with the new problems that arose over time. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that was really important because we were not taught about marriage in school. We probably should have been, or relationships or communication, any of those things. And so because the lack of knowledge or like the expectations or what we bring into the relationship isn't there, you know, it's something that greatly affects the longevity of your relationship. And then I looked into like how important is premarital counseling for marriages. And what I found was that premarital counseling studies have shown that it can reduce the likelihood of future divorce by around 50%. It's more effective to do quality premarital counseling for about 6 to 9 months than living together as a couple before marriage.
That's interesting.
Isn't that so interesting?
Yeah.
But as Emily stated earlier, a lot of the premarital counseling programs that are out there are religious. And there are so many people who have been looking for a premarital counseling course program that is not religious. And so we made it a point to create one at the therapy group because of how important it is and because of the amount of couples work we do. And we have so many people who reach out and say, I want this. Like, I want to be able to communicate about money, to communicate about sex, to learn how to fight fairly, to that there's so many things, and to understand how my, you know, past is affecting my relationship now. Setting boundaries with in-laws is another one. So there's just so many topics that this program tackles. And we wanted to put it out there. And then we got so many questions about it.
Yeah. So, okay. So we'll tell you a little bit about how our program works. And then we're going to go into this. So some of the things that we hit in our program, which is how your past affects your present, boundaries and expectations, money, sex and intimacy, fighting fairly, and the future altogether. So I know that those are huge, like sort of umbrella terms. So we ask people to send in their questions to talk about this. But Jen, I want to start with you. Is there anything you wish you knew before you were married that would have been helpful now?
The thing that would have been helpful, like one of the things is in-laws. In-laws is a really big thing and how I don't think I fully understood the extent to which that plays a toll, not just in our relationship, but like on us as individuals and then how that stress affects the relationship in general.
Yes.
So that's a piece of it. And it's the thing that, you know, I read earlier that said, you know, I wasn't prepared for like the changes. I think one of the things that's been really helpful, at least about being a couples therapist, is understanding that, like the expectations I had going into marriage were helpful because of being a couples therapist and like kind of seeing that and understanding that. But when you're in it, really going through those changes is a completely different story. Mm-hmm. To be able to have those communication skills, to be able to have the resilience to say, like, how are we going to work through this together? You know, I think it takes time to build that. So I think the knowledge of it is really important. It's another thing to experience it and to like use those tools that you have and to practice those tools. So that's what I would say. What about you?
So in-laws are a huge one. I would say for us, money, we both had, I think when you usually for most people, when they come into a marriage, they are both have their own money.
Yes.
And it's separate, right? And so I think that everyone goes in with expectations that are often not communicated about how are we going to handle joint money and what's money going to look like and what happens when one of us starts making a lot more money than the other. And especially when it came to parents, you know, I think the funny, I was talking to actually Aaron's cousin, Aaron, my husband's cousin the other day. And I was like, oh, well, you know, like, you're the best parent before you become a parent, right? Because before you become a parent, you're like, I'm never going to let them watch the iPad. I'm never going to let them do this. And we're never going to fight in front of them, which is hilarious. Which actually in Adam Grant's latest book, he talks about the importance of fighting in front of your children to show them how to stand up for themselves and how to handle conflict. Yeah. So before you have a parent, it's really easy to say how you're the perfect parent. And it's very hard once you're in the moment to actually be human.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, in-laws, money, and parenting are huge things. And, you know, I think we talked about it as best we could, but sometimes then life hits you, right? Like, you know, it's easy to say, oh, here's how we're going to handle something. And then life throws you something totally different. So somebody had asked in, what are the best topics to cover under the in-law umbrella?
Boundaries.
So boundaries, especially boundaries around communication. What happens if your mom calls 15 times a day? What happens if your mom wants to come over all the time? What happens if your parents never want to come over and I feel like it's rejection? What happens as they get older? Are we going to take care of them? Do we help give them money? Do we pay for them? What happens if you're going to fight with your parents or if I'm in a fight with them? Do we support each other? Do we stay out of it? What does that look like for us? And I think, you know, something, we had Julianne Taylor Shore on this show. She said something really beautiful, which is that it is not up to me to define what is a dysfunctional relationship. Mm. And what she meant by that is we get to make our own rules in marriage.
Yeah. One of the really difficult transitions that I think couples go through is going from, you know, the family, the boundary around the family they grew up in to the boundary around the family that they're forming.
Mm-hmm.
And marriage is almost a time in which that transition really starts to happen. And without the conversation or the understanding of that switch, so much can get lost in communication. And so to really understand marriage as I'm forming, you know, a new family, and what does that boundary look like around my new family? And what does that look like in conjunction with the family I grew up in? And what does that look like in conjunction with the family you grew up in? What does communication look like? You know, another big thing I think is holidays. Like, where do we spend our holidays? What does that look like for us? What new traditions are we forming as, you know, between the two of us, between, you know, us and the kids, the family that you're forming? And I think that there is a lot of grief that comes with that, that couples aren't prepared for, because you are grieving kind of this idea of, well, this is kind of what my traditions used to look like. I'm forming new traditions, and that's really exciting. But at the same time, I'm also letting go of traditions that I once had. Like, life is going to look a little different. And I don't think we are fully prepared for that part of marriage, is understanding the grief that can also come with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you say, you know, we're forming new traditions and it's exciting. What happens if you don't think it's exciting?
Right. Exactly.
But if you're like, no, this all sucks.
Yes.
And that's really hard, right? Also because, especially if somebody lives far away from their family, like in like a geographical, like physical way, like you might not know how it really is until, like, all of a sudden you're married, you spend more time with someone, or you're planning a wedding, and you're like, oh, wait a second. This is different than I thought it was going to be, right?
Yeah, there's so many little things you're just, like, not prepared for.
Yeah.
And there's so much compromise, mm-hmm. right? And, like, you could talk about compromise, though. Like, I'm great at compromise. And then when you're in it, you're like, shit.
Anyone else feeling like the mental load of making dinner, the planning, the shopping, the prep, figuring out the timing? It's a little heavy to carry, huh? Same. That's why I am so grateful for Hungry Root. The food quality, simple recipes, true tastiness, and delivery right to my door is truly a game changer. When getting started, you take a fun, short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know you, what you like to eat, and more. Then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations to put those groceries to use, so you can sit back, relax, and offload the many steps of meal planning. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood, healthy snacks, smoothies, sweets, ready meals, kids' snacks and meals, vitamins, supplements, much more. My favorite item from my latest box was the honey citrus chopped salad, lemon pepper chicken, and the four cheese tortellini. You gotta try it for yourself. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's gotta taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Did you know that billions of plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles end up in landfills every year? I used to contribute to that waste, constantly buying single-use plastic cleaning products without giving it much thought. But then I discovered Blue Land, and it has been a game changer. Blue Land has helped me eliminate the need for single-use plastic and the products I reach for the most. They are reinventing cleaning essentials. Their approach is simple yet revolutionary. Refillable cleaning products with a sleek design that not only looks great on your counter, but also reduces plastic waste significantly. What I love most is the convenience. With Blue Land, I never worry about running out of cleaning supplies or lugging bulky bottles from the store. From hand soap to toilet bowl cleaner to laundry tablets that each smell incredible, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. I was blown away when I received my first Blue Land order. I immediately filled the bottles with water and their tablets, which was so easy to try everything out. And the ingredients are clean, the scents are refreshing, and the packaging is just so cute. Blue Land is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine. If you're ready to make a positive change for the planet without sacrificing cleanliness or convenience, Blue Land has you covered. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
We were talking about this the other night. We're like, you know, we had this conversation around money. And we're just like, you know, like the thing is like, sometimes it does suck when you make a lot of money and like, but like it is joint money. And like, listen, like if my husband made all the money, I'd also want it to be mine as well. But then it's just hard, right? So like when you're single, you make this money and then you get to decide what to do with it. And then you're married and all of a sudden you're having joint conversations if you choose to combine finances, which not everyone does. And it is hard. It's hard to not have full control. It's hard to compromise. It's hard to not always get your way.
It's so hard.
Which my couples therapist recently said to me, Emily, you know you don't always get your way, right? I said, what?
I'm sorry, what?
What? Fascinating information, Ginger. I didn't know that.
But yeah, I think that that's, and I think that's why shared goals are so important to talk about too, mm-hmm. right? I think that very much blends with boundaries, it blends with finances, because for you, for the two of you to be on the same page with like how, you know, what do we want to spend our money on? What does that look like? And so to talk about those shared goals, like what do we want to work towards, is a really important part of this conversation too.
Yeah. Somebody said, how soon? When is a good time and date to have these conversations? Guys, we are not a good people to ask because we think it's the day of. We are biased
biased therapist.
We're like, as soon as you meet.
Any dating coach would be like, don't do that. Let it be sexy at the beginning. Have a honeymoon face. We don't ask us.
We're like, get right in there.
We are so biased.
As soon as you meet, what are you interested in life? Do you want to have kids? What does this look like?
The funniest part is sometimes you'll be, if you're working with a client who's going through a divorce and your advice is exactly different than what the lawyer is wanting them to do.
Yes.
Like you're like, meet together and talk this out to support your children. The lawyer's like, don't talk at all.
Don't do that.
So we have to sometimes be like, listen, like sometimes the advice we give is not the advice someone else would. We think as early as possible. And that doesn't have to mean we sit down and talk about it on date three. But it can be like, do you envision yourself living in a city or a suburb? Do you envision yourself always working or traveling? Do you envision yourself being staying in the city that you're in right now or moving away? Do you envision yourself like if we're traveling on holidays or going home? Like it doesn't have to be this like really awkward clinical conversation. It can be like just a conversation.
Well, it also helps you like really understand how much you connect with that person, right? Yeah. Like I think I'm thinking back to, and this is like on my first date with my husband, he said to me, what are you looking for in a relationship?
What a man.
It's the simplest question.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God. I was so taken aback because those questions don't typically happen on first dates. And so it was such a breath of fresh air.
But how often do people answer truthfully? The other thing is if your partner says something amazing like Bill did, are you answering honestly? Because sometimes we're not because we just want to be chosen and we're like trying really hard to be chill. Yeah. Right? Like, so if you're like, I'm not looking for marriage. I'm just trying to have a good time. But like, you're like, you know, secretly putting pheromones all over your skin to get them to like you more.
So
like
thing?
Also is there, I don't know. I think so.
I think it might be.
Yeah, it's a thing.
If you're a pheromone company, you can reach out to us for
sponsored by pheromones. Okay. somebody said, is it too late? How can we shift and have these conversations while married? It is never too late.
Never. And on
start
top
today.
Of that, you should start today. And also, even if you've had these conversations, they can shift over the course of your marriage.
Oh, somebody brought that up. Wait, can I read the question?
Yeah, please, please.
Somebody said, I had some of these conversations before getting married and our goals have changed as we got older. How to readdress these conversations? Example, where I want to live/put down roots.
I think it's common that
most people change throughout their lives. So like recontracting in all relationships, right? You would recontract at work. You would ask for a raise. You would ask for a different job title. You would ask for different responsibilities. Recontracting is a huge part of any relationship and an important part of communication. If things shift when we become parents, when we buy a home, if we start a business, as our parents get older, we're taking care of them, we must recontract. And we mean an exact expressive contract. We do not mean an unconscious or unspoken contract, things we make assumption with. Well, we had kids, so now I think he's going to stop drinking.
Right.
Doesn't work like that.
It's interesting now that we're talking about it because, you know, obviously our program at the therapy group is called premarital. You know, it's a premarital program. But maybe we have to change the name because
I think it was originally called Making Your Marriage Work, the e-course.
Right. The e-course was.
But this is the live in-person program.
You know, because I think that there is something to be said about rehaving these conversations. Yeah. And maybe it's not the full thing. Maybe like it's in certain contexts, right? If you already had the conversation about not having kids, you made the choice to not have kids. Doesn't mean you have to, you know, if you're both on the same page. But mm-hmm. if there needs to be a conversation about a goal that was changed throughout your marriage, that is something to dive into. And so to expect that some of these, even though you have the conversation before you get married, it is possible that some of these things can change and you mm-hmm. might not have control over that. You will not have control over it when it comes to your partner. Your partner's views can change at any time, but you can prepare as much as possible knowing that you are on the same page where you are at when you are getting married.
Yeah. We have to talk about finances.
Oh, fun.
because there was 1 million questions about finances. And when I say that word, everyone has the same exact reaction as Jen, which is, ugh, fun.
Ugh.
And part of this, somebody wrote in how to talk about finances and debt. I have a lot of shame around this. We've talked about this before in the show, but I will work with people for a fucking decade and we will talk about everything, childhood sexual abuse, verbal, you know what I mean? Like so much horrible things that include shame. And then 10 years later, they're like, and I have credit card debt. And I'm like, wow, man, that shit is so deep.
So deep.
That was like where the deepest shame is. And I think for so many of us, we're worried about what it says about us. As if we don't live in an impossible world that tells people to open up credit cards at a very young age and doesn't teach people any information about money and finances. And most of us, right, we've had Amanda Clayton, who is the amazing financial therapist. We should have her on again. She was so
incredible.
Great. And that was like a really early season.
Yeah, it was.
And she really talked a lot about that our relationships with finances developed around ages 4 and 5. What is modeled for us? And so for so much of this, we have shame because we feel like it says something about us. But I would just say that it's just something we have to figure out. It's just information. And talking about it earlier is going to be something that's better to deal with. But I've also seen, you know, as everyone knows, I love Reddit. I mean, you'll see people on Reddit that talk about like, oh, I just found out that my partner has more debt than I've realized. And people will be like, divorce them. Like, what the fuck? Like, Reddit loves telling people to get divorced. It's unbelievable. If you spend like 5 seconds on like, you think you're an asshole or would I be the asshole if, or like two opinions, like these are all subreddits. Everyone is just like, get divorced. If you listen to Reddit, if you listen to Reddit, that divorce rate's like sky high again. Listen. Money, sex, in-laws, this shit is complex. And when there's complexity, there is emotions around it. And emotions can often make us shut down. That does not mean that person is a liar or bad. It means that it's fucking complex.
Especially shame, right?
Yes.
Shame keeps us quiet. And, you know, Brené Brown always talks about how the opposite of shame is vulnerability. And to have vulnerable conversations around money, something that's so difficult to talk about. And that's the thing, is it heightens. I mean, even in my relationship, talking about it, like heightened, you can feel in both of us, it like heightens our emotions so much to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I am like constantly regulating when I'm having conversations about money, like internally. I'm just like,
even with you and I.
Yeah. Oh, I'm like,
when we have to have conversations around money with the business, it's fucking hard.
It's so hard. And it's like regulate. It's like, and you can feel it, right? Like we're both like regulating so much because of the amount of emotion that money brings up. And I also think sometimes the shame around it comes from this idea that like it shouldn't be emotional.
Mm.
You know, when you think about money, you like kind of don't think about it as an emotional thing for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it is so emotional.
Yeah.
It drives, you know, for a lot of us, what it means, it means something different for a lot of us. Like for me, money means like freedom, right? Like I can make decisions, I can do, right? There's like, but there's an emotional attachment to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
what's mine?
What? Yeah, what's yours?
Mine's like money comes and goes. Like I'm way more detached.
Yes.
From money than you are.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
You have way more of a scarcity mindset with money. For me, I'm like, this shit's always coming. It's always like going.
Right. Not even a question.
Yeah.
That is very clear.
But because of mine, sometimes I can be frivolous.
Right.
And not make good financial decisions or make impulsive financial decisions. And then sometimes for you, that can be overwhelming.
Yeah.
And for me, feeling like I can't spend is overwhelming, right? So like you see this thing, it's not that one of us is right or the other is wrong. It's that there definitely should be the fucking in the middle between both of us because we're both extremes.
And we have inched so much. And it's funny because Emily is married to someone like me and I'm married to someone like Emily. Which is so funny.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, but I think that's common, right? That you end up with someone who is kind of like on the other end of the spectrum. That beautiful opposites attract thing.
Yeah.
All
A really fun fact about me that you might not know is that if I let my hair dry natural, it is a frizzball mess, which is one of the many reasons I absolutely love Prose. I truly never thought that I would be able to embrace my natural hair texture. Ever since I switched to a custom hair routine with Prose, I've noticed so many benefits. Less frizzy hair, yes, but beyond that too. My hair is shinier, healthier, and so much more manageable. Filming the podcast every week makes checking out my hair unavoidable, and I have felt so much more confident on camera thanks to Prose. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. The custom shampoo and conditioner combo, plus the hydrating leave-in conditioner and hair oil, keeps the frizz at bay. It also makes for the smoothest blowout. People keep asking me if I got my hair cut or went to the salon, which is, of course, the highest compliment. Prose isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're certified B Corp cruelty-free and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. They even have a review and refine tool which learns from my feedback and adjusts my formula to keep up with the seasons and changes in my life. I used this feature when I moved to my temporary house in New Jersey, back to my house post-construction project in Pennsylvania. Environmental factors like water source is something that Prose takes into consideration with their customization. So it was very cool that I had the ability to update my location. Prose is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin, and they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at prose.com/shrinkchicks. So you get a free consultation, then 50% off at prose.com/shrinkchicks. That's prose.com/shrinkchicks.
So somebody had said, so let's take all this, how to approach discussions around shared financial responsibilities. So a lot of people are saying is, how do we talk about this, right? And I think you have a good opportunity to say is that, like, I love you and I want us to be married for fucking forever until we're both in the goddamn ground. And with that, I want us to make sure that we're on the same page financially. Is there a good time that we could sit down and talk about what are our shared financial goals? For some people, their shared financial goals is like, I want to save as much fucking money as possible and retire early. For other people, it's, you know what? I love my job. I love what I do. I never want to retire, but I want to be able to travel a lot now and use my money now. For some people, it's, oh, I want to invest in this house, or I want to invest in properties, or I want to, you know, it's there's no right or wrong. The hard part is oftentimes if you Google financial gurus, it is a very black and white idea. But we don't agree with that because we're couples therapists and what works for one couple might not work for you. So sitting down and saying, what does this mean? And also, can I hear my partner? And can I be honest and express myself? And what is the emotions I have around money?
I think that one thing has been really helpful, at least in my relationship, is being really curious about why my partner like feels the way they do about money. You know, that it isn't a conversation about like this specific instance. It's like, well, tell me like why you feel that way. And like, I can understand, you know, I can like understand why on the other end of the spectrum, like he'll be like, we could die tomorrow. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Like, why? And so it helps me to move a little bit in, you know, the middle to be able to say, like, that's fair.
And what needs to be said is we could live for forever.
And we could live for forever. And so we inch.
Because mine's like, yeah, fuck it.
And we inch towards the middle. So I think sometimes when we're really anxious about something, when we're really, there's a lot of shame, there's a lot of emotion around it, we hold on so strongly to our point of view, and it doesn't allow the space to be able to really hear the other side of it. And so to get curious with your partner about like, tell me what money means to you. Tell me about like why you feel that way. Like take me into that, because I think we get so stuck on like a topic, right? Like, oh, we should pay for this or we shouldn't pay for this, as opposed to being like, tell me the emotions that you have around money. Tell me like where that comes from for you. Like get really curious about your partner's point of view and then express your point. Listen, I understand. Like, I get that. I totally understand why you would feel that way. For me, this is how I grew up, and this is why it's so hard for me. It brings up a lot of anxiety for me to do it that way. So like, let's talk about like what that looks like in the context of our relationship.
Now, what happens, let's say, if somebody goes into a relationship and let's say they get together and they're both making a lot of money, enjoying life, somebody loses a job. You have to recontract. Now, what does our budget look like? Now, what do we spend money on? Now, how do we suss this all out? Things have to change as life changes. You see this a ton of people. You have one parent who starts to stay at home. Many people know that my husband was a stay-at-home dad. Amazing stay-at-home dad. He said it was the worst job he's ever had. he was like, this job sucks. No one respects me and I don't fucking get paid and I don't get promotions.
And my boss. And my boss.
My boss is a dictator. My boss is a fucking dictator. This shit sucks. That time, we were a single income household. So how we spent money needed to be very different than how we were before. And now he works and has a job. And I think we didn't do a great job of talking about that because it was really fucking hard to give up some of the luxuries we had grown accustomed to.
Yeah.
Change is hard.
Change is so hard. So hard. And sometimes you're going so quickly that it's like you don't have the, it almost feels like you don't have the time to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
So, which I think is why like having this like premarital program is so important because it almost forces you to have these conversations.
Yeah.
But, and you're just like, oh God, like, you know, like the same reaction I had when you were like, let's talk about finances. Like that is a common reaction. Like who wants to sit down and talk about that? No one, but it's so important because it's going to come out in other ways if you don't.
Well, and the other thing is once you get on the same page and you're hitting those goals, those conversations actually don't suck as much.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Those
They're
conversations.
Easier.
Yes. Those conversations when you're like, hell yeah, we did it this week. We did it. We saved this amount of money. All of a sudden, it's exciting to do that, right? So like before, if me and my husband talked about money, it was so anxiety producing for me. Now I'm like, hey, look at this amount that we have that we talked about. We're getting there. Here's this goal. Now we can do this thing. So I think the thing is everything sucks at first.
Yes.
I won't say everything. Most things suck at first. And slowly having conversations, you get more and more comfortable about the topic. It is exposure therapy. But especially if you came from a family where they didn't ever talk about money, it's going to feel so uncomfortable at first.
Or if there was like so much like tension around money.
Yeah.
Right? Like there was just a lot of if you really like struggled with money, you know, if your family struggled with money growing up, like the tension around it too.
Yeah. Somebody said you should recommend Ramit Seethi's. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm so sorry. Book and podcast for how to do money talk to their partners. So we've never heard of that. But hey, someone else thought it was great. You should check it out too. Okay. Let's talk about sex. So let's say you get together with your partner and you're having lots of sex, man. Shit's good. Life's fun. There's alcohol. We're partying. Sexy, sexy, sexy. No responsibilities. Great. You had a dog. Sex is still okay, but you got this puppy crying. What do I do?
Blah, it's looking blah. At you.
Looking at you, right? You get a mortgage. You get a job where you work late. You have a kid. I'm imagining your sex life is going to change in some way. For some of us, it changes a ton. For other people, it's just some, but it's going to change at some point. How do you have a conversation at the beginning of your relationship about eventually, because all sex and intimacy ebbs and flows, how is it going to be for us if that goes away for a little bit? How is it going to be if I literally can't have sex? I'm pregnant, I get put on pelvic rest, or I'm postpartum and I can't have sex, or I have some type of pain happening, or I have medical stuff. What happens if I can have sex? What's this going to mean for us? How do we want to handle it as we get there? And I know that's uncomfortable. And we all love saying, well, that won't happen to us. And it's, you're wrong. I'm so sorry, you're
wrong. Simply wrong.
It's going to happen because life happens.
Yeah. You know, so often we hear couples come in and say, we were having so much sex when we first met.
I know. It's so sweet. It's great.
It's so sweet. Well, we were going out, you know, we were having such a fun time. We were having sex every night.
Same.
Times were different.
Times were different.
And so that's another piece of like understanding the expectations of relationships and what happens in long-term relationships,
mm-hmm.
that is part of it. And so it's not about that not happening. It's about what do you do? How do you prepare for when sex ebbs and flows, when your connection ebbs and flows? What does that look like? How do you communicate about it? How personally are you taking it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh, how personal are you taking it? Yeah.
Because I think that's a big piece, right? If we don't communicate about that, then one partner could be the partner with the higher libido is, you know, initiating sex. And the other partner's too tired, stressed. There's a lot going on. It feels very personal. The thing that once was making you feel connected to your partner is no longer there. The thing that once was making you feel really loved by your partner is no longer there. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have a conversation about that of this is, you know, I'm not feeling loved or I'm not feeling this connection. And I want to talk about that because are there ways for us to feel connected? And is there ways that I can feel loved in other ways if sex it right now, you know, is not on the table?
Yeah. So it goes, right? So somebody had asked how you will change as people as you age and the relationship becomes different, how to grow together. Have you met your partner in their growth? You are so right. This is going to change. Do you create time to get to know that new person? That means, do I leave time for date nights? Do I leave time for asking each other about ourselves? I think so often people think, well, we've been together forever. We know everything. It's a lie. It's a lie, 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 lie. It's all a lie. You will change. Tell me about something new you learned about yourself this year. What's something new you learned about our relationship this year? What's something new you learned about me this year? Have you met your partner now? And how do you feel about that person? It's okay because it's not the version you fell in love with. Can you love that version of them? What parts about them do you love with that? And what parts are taking some time to get adjusted to?
One of the reasons why it might be tough to, or we hit these kind of like pain points when our partners are changing. I think because when our partners are changing, it's something that is out of our control, right? It's something that's out of our control yet affects our lives. And in any relationship, when someone changes, it's hard for us, right? We so often want to keep people in this box because there's a fear of they change and the relationship is going to change. And so I'm going to hold on tightly to like what I know, and I'm going to hold on to the person that I know. Because without that, then like I have to adjust. And so sometimes our partner changing can bring up our own anxiety about like, what does this mean for our relationship? What we have to do is recognize the anxiety that it's bringing up for us. Because without that recognition, we might be reacting to it to try to hold our partner back in this spot. And then it causes these fights and these pain points, as opposed to saying, okay, I understand this is bringing up anxiety for me, but how do I like listen to my partner, get to know my partner, like you were saying, and really understand the place that they're coming from? They're allowed to change just as I'm allowed to change in the relationship, right? If something was changing for me, would I want my partner to try to hold me back or hold me in this place where I was? No, you want the freedom to also be able to change in the context of the relationship. So how can you be a good supportive partner and regulate your own emotions, your own anxiety while your partner is making this change? And just to recognize, yeah, this is bringing up something for me. How can I work through that for myself so that I can give that space to my partner?
I just want to know your thought about this one.
Tell me.
Someone asked, do you think it's easier for someone who comes from a dysfunctional family to be in a relationship with someone who also has trauma?
I don't know if easier is the word.
Not necessarily, yeah.
I wouldn't say easier. I would say that I think that it happens because it feels like you're able to relate to the person in a different way. And so I wonder if that's what easier means, is that like there's this like understanding. What I think is important if you have childhood trauma, your partner has childhood trauma, is that you are both doing your individual work so that you are doing whatever you can to not bring it into the relationship, and that you can communicate about it with each other in a way that feels really productive for the relationship. Yeah. So I wouldn't say easier, but I would say I understand why it happens, because it feels like you can relate so much more to each other.
Yeah. I really want to hear what you have to say about this one.
Okay.
How to address childhood trauma when you're not sure if they can receive the information or had a perfect childhood?
How to address trauma when you're not sure if they... Okay. So...
No one has a perfect childhood.
Yes.
You got trauma. If you think that your childhood was perfect,
I like that we have to say this is in quotes.
Yeah, yeah, perfect. The person thinks that. So the hard part is your partner doesn't think they have any experience or childhood issues.
Yes.
Which people love to believe.
Yeah.
Husband. Now that my husband doesn't commute anymore, doesn't listen to the show anymore, so I can really say
so it really works out. Right.
Yeah.
Really
he used perfect. To like listen to some episodes. Your husband's never heard it.
Never. Not once. And he's like, let me come on the podcast. Wants so bad. Still got him for that. You know, I think something really important is, first of all, just like this blanket statement in general, that someone else doesn't have to have trauma to understand or be able to be there for you in yours. And so I'm wondering if, are you holding back to talk about what you went through because you don't believe that your partner will be able to be there for you? Is that based in your relationship, or is that based in the fact that no one was able to be there for you growing up? And because of that, right, when you grow up in a household where you're parentified or you're going through something and an adult couldn't be there for you in your time of need, as an adult, it's sometimes hard to believe that other people are going to be able to be there for you now. So I'm wondering how much of this is based in what you went through growing up, or is it based in the fact that you have tried to open up about what you went through and your partner was unable to be there for you? If it is based in your current relationship, then to slowly open up those conversations, right? To say, like, you don't have to understand to be able to hear me and be here for me while I talk to you about it. I don't need you to fix this. I don't. And here is what I need when I talk to you about it. I need you to listen. You know, if you're curious, you can ask me questions. I don't need you to fix it. Talk about the things you need in that conversation. They might need some guidance on how to be there for you. And my question would also be, do you even know how they can be there for you? If no one was there for you growing up at the times in which you needed them, it's possible you might not even know what you need. And so really get to know, what is it that I need in this conversation? What does this look like for me? If my parent was able to give me what I needed growing up, what would that have looked like? How do you bring that into your relationship now?
We have to move on to Tier M and Jen. But I do want to say, if any of this resonated with you, please reach on out. We have this awesome premarital program that we do. That you can read more about it at our website at therapygroup.com. Check it out. Kelly and Kate, who are currently running it, are fucking awesome. Okay. Dear Em and Jen, thank you so much for all you do. I love the podcast. I'm getting married this summer and feeling extremely torn about doing a father-daughter dance. For context, as long as I can remember, I've had a difficult relationship with my dad. Growing up, he was always angry, overbearing, controlling, and didn't allow me to make any decisions for myself. Whenever I would ask why he was telling me no to something I asked to do, he would scream, "Because I said so," or "Because I'm the parent." Every once in a while, my mom would jump in, take my side, and convince him to let me go wherever I was asking to go. But most of the time, the conversation ended in me being grounded for talking back. The dynamic only got worse as I got older. I am now 30 years old and still have a very strained relationship. About 4 months ago, everything shifted when my dad started going to therapy. Through therapy, he was able to communicate to me, my mom, and my brother that he was sexually abused by the local priest when he was a child. This abuse happened multiple times when he was 9 and 10 years old. He also told us he had been struggling with sex addiction for the last 15 years. He said it started right around the time his dad, my grandfather, passed away. Thinking about what he went through as a child makes me feel very sad, and I feel so bad for him. I cannot imagine carrying something so heavy for over 50 years. At the same time, I feel angry that he was essentially living a double life for 15 years. I'm angry he betrayed my mom and hurt he lied to me and my brother. However, knowing about his childhood and addiction does make me understand him more and why he parented the way he did. How do I separate feeling bad for him as a child and angry at him for his 15-year addiction? How do I overcome my anger? I don't want to do a father-daughter dance at my wedding because I don't feel we have ever had a good relationship, but I also feel guilty for not wanting to. I know he's been through so much and is working very hard to repair his relationship with me, my brother, and my mom. so I feel like I will make things even worse by telling him he won't be doing a dance at my wedding. Should I feel uncomfortable at my wedding so I don't hurt his feelings?
Wow.
Awesome is this person? The fucking insight, amazing. Empathy.
Oh my God.
This person has done some fucking awesome work. We adore you.
The first thing I want to say is that, yes, you can understand that your dad went through a lot. You can have empathy for your dad. And at the same time, you can still hold the pain for what you went through. And it's okay for you to feel pain in that relationship and have empathy for him at the same time. One does not have to exist without the other. And I know that can be really hard, is to hold both things. But for you to be able to have empathy for him, but also empathy for yourself at the same time, is really, really important. And it's wonderful that he is doing the work that he's doing, that he's able to talk to you about, like, these are the reasons why I really struggled with this. But you are still allowed to feel how you feel. It doesn't take away from the emotion that you feel in that relationship. And, you know, I wonder if, because he's going through this, there's this push to, like, let go of that anger and let go of kind of the pain you feel. But you also get to work through that on your own. Just because he is at this place doesn't mean you have to be at a different place or you have to be letting go of this. You get to decide when you do that. That gets to be your own journey. And so in terms of a father-daughter dance, you know, I think that it brings up another question of how we so often feel like we have to follow this mold of what a wedding looks like. You know, because there's this expected father-daughter dance, I must do that. But you get to decide what you do at your wedding. And this is a day for you to feel really authentic, for you to be really connected with your partner. And I think it's really important to set boundaries around that. It goes back to the conversation around, you are now creating a boundary around your new family. And so it's, you know, it sounds like one of the things you're struggling with is going from, okay, I'm, you know, protecting dad and putting a boundary around the family I grew up in, moving and transitioning over into creating a boundary around this new family I'm creating. So for you to make a decision that feels right for you, I think it also signifies that you are now creating a boundary around the new family you're making by getting married.
I'm thinking a lot about the question they asked of, how do I separate feeling bad for him as a child and angry at him for his 15-year addiction? And I think, you know, we've talked about this on many episodes, but this is the duality. This is holding the complexity of people, which is, you can have empathy and sympathy and love and understanding for someone and be really fucking hurt by them. And they are not mutually exclusive. And I'm also wondering, has there been enough space for them to express their anger? You let your dad come to you and tell you this information. Was there also family therapy that was able to happen afterwards? That's great. Your dad got this care, but you deserve to be able to express your anger too. I don't know if that's going to help you overcome it, but I know it's a step.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode of Shrink Chicks.
We'll see you back here next Monday for another session.
In the meantime, if you want a question answered or a topic discussed, follow us on Instagram at Shrink Chicks. And if you're looking to get connected with a therapist like us to start or continue your therapeutic journey, visit thetherapygroup.com. Just fill out a contact form on our website and we will personally match you with one of our amazing therapists.
Also, if you'd be so kind, we'd love a rating review and for you to share with a friend or an enemy or a mother-in-law. Honestly, whoever needs it, so that we can keep reaching more people on our mission to bring mental health topics to your ears every week.
Thanks for being here with us. And don't forget, to grow yourself, you got to know yourself.
Welcome to Raw Beauty Talks. I'm your host, Erin Treloar. Ready to peer behind the highlight reel and all those polished pictures of the world's biggest influencers and wellness experts? We're going to uncover what beauty, health, and wellness truly means in today's world. Warning though, there will be no surface level conversations here. As someone who really struggled with disordered eating and negative body image, after trying to check all those be healthy boxes, I became a health coach because I'm passionate about redefining health and wellness so that it's less about the weight on the scale and more about how we feel. I truly believe how you feel on the inside reflects out into every aspect of your life. So if you're ready to go below skin deep to tap into a whole other level of wellness, you're in the right place. Let's pull back the curtain for some raw beauty talks.